accession number 18560, reel 3.
Harry Simpson, right. Reel 3. You were just telling about those casualties at Agalia.
Agalia, yes.
Agalia.
From Agalia, I and one of the platoon members of the carrier platoon were struck down by jaundice, yellow jaundice, Jimmy Logan and I. And we finished up in what had been an Italian hospital at Mersa Brega. Whilst we were in there, we were supposed to have fatless foods, but all we were getting were corned beef and hard tack biscuits. So I said to the orderly one day, I said, what's wrong with the fatless foods? You're supposed to have chicken and stuff without any fat in it. He said, unfortunately, the Germans have sunk the supply ships. So he said, we just have to make do with what we've got. So with that, I said to Jimmy Logan, I said, look, Jimmy, let's see what money we've got between us. We'll go to this other village. We'll buy our bread and what we can. Anyway, in the other village we found we could get plenty of other bread and eggs, hard-boiled eggs, and tins of marmalade. But the marmalade was Italian army issue that the Arabs had pilfered. But they sold us it. And for the rest of the time we were there, Jimmy Logan and I ate Arab bread and marmalade. The doctor came round one morning and he said, Simpson, he said, how are you? I said, I'm fine, sir. I said, I'll tell you what, I'm bloody fit and I'm fit to move, rejoin my unit again. He says, you're not fit until I say so. He says, you are destined to go back to Egypt. I said, am I? I'll tell you what I'll do. To prove how fit I am, I'll run down this bloody hospital and beat you. But he wouldn't have none of it. Anyway, I saw the ambulance roll up outside the admin building. I saw the lads called there. I said, what's the ambulance for? He said, I'm taking chaps away back to Benghazi. He says, join the reinforcement holding unit. Oh, I see, you'll be the one I'm chasing as well. Where did I go get my kit? So I ran back inside, got an envelope, just sealed it up, scrawled on it, I don't know what I scrawled on, and ran outside. He was just locking the back door. I said, hold on. I said, I'm discharged. How do I know? I says, it's bloody envelope. I says, oh, I leave that. He says, jump in. So I jumped in. Finished up in Benghazi, reinforcement holding unit. And the chap in charge of it was from the HLI and RSM, ex-RSM of the HLI. Well, he was RSM of the H1st Battalion, HLI. Hello, Jesus. He says, what are you doing here? Well, I says, between you and me, I'm a deserter from the hospital. He says, oh, bloody hell, I have to get rid of you right sharp. I said, I want to get back to the unit as quick as I can. I'm all right, don't worry about me, but I need some kit. Anyway, he gave me a great coat and a blanket and a ground sheet and some food. And he got me transport on an RASC supply column. They were carrying foodstuffs, which was an eye-opener to me, because just then, a few weeks prior to my being in hospital, we started getting boxes of compo rations, 14-man compo rations. And I sat in the back of a 3-ton truck that day, driving up. Two chaps sat there, pulled the bayonets out, or crowbars, started opening the boxes. Now, I do remember, if I remember correctly, they were marked A, B and C, denoting the foodstuffs that was in them. A, of course, was the best foodstuffs. B was slightly less, and C, of course, it was punk, it was no good. However, they opened these boxes and they were picking the best out. New Zealand tins of butter, putting away to one side. All the best stuff come out, tin bacon, soya sausages, and the poor stuff was moved about back in the A box. I couldn't do anything about it, I couldn't say anything because I was only being transported. Until they dropped me off. I said, this is where you get off, we don't go no further. I said, right here, lad. So I went up to their office and I said, excuse me, sir. But I said, I thank you very much for transporting me up as far as you can. But I said, I am very disappointed. In what way? I said, you're here at the lines of communication. You're pilfering the foodstuffs for the men in the front line from the infantry. I said, we didn't realise. I've had it done to me as well as the other lads up there. But to actually see men, your men doing that in the back of the truck, opening the boxes and transporting the good stuff to the bad stuff, the bad stuff to the good stuff. I said, by God, I would never have thought it, the British soldier. Well, he said, it's one of those things, isn't it? I said, right, the report will be going in. I'll see my colonel and the brigadier when I get back. What transpired from that, I don't know. However, when he dropped me off, I kept walking on the coast road for a while. Oh, I walked a fair while. And I came a vehicle park. So I thought, right, this will do me a night. I'll stay here a night. They'll give me food. I walked in. I said, could I stay here for the night, please? By all means. He says, can you drive? I says, yes, I can drive. Can we show you to drive? There'll be any proof? I said, yes, there it is. So he says, well, you can stay here tonight. Will you take a truck up tomorrow morning up to the front? Where you want to go, drop it off where you want to go. He says, or if you see another vehicle park up there, near where you want to be. I said, I don't know where the hell I want to be. I said, Tripoli, anyway. Oh, that's good enough. So I had a look round and I picked a truck out that was coming. It was a signal truck, a van. This little mini grand, full of petrol, spare jerry cans in, and off I built it like bloody hell towards Tripoli. So I parked that just outside Tripoli, about 15 to 20 miles from Tripoli. I sat at the side of the road, with old Tam O'Shanter on, the red hackles showing. I was dozing away and I heard this truck coming. And I looked and I says, bloody hell, I'm certain. It's 69. Well, 69 was a battalion divisional number. HD 69. Big Humber. who should be in it but the colonel? And they didn't. So me and up, they pulled up. Hello, Simpson. Bloody glad to see you. What are you doing here? So I told the CO, I says, well, sir, I says, I don't know what you know, but I says, I'm on the run from hospital. I said, deserted. He said, why? I said, well, they were going to send me back to bloody Egypt. And I said, once you got back there, I said, you never knew where you were. I said, they're not taking me away from the battalion. I said, they weren't doing that anyway. So I said, I deserted. And the adjutant turned around and says, that's right, Jesus. We've had a report about you from the hospital. Well, I said, forget it now. I said, I'm back, so to hell with it. I never heard no more. So I went into Tripoli and the CO sent for me a couple of days later. He says, I'm glad to see you back, Simpson. He says, as I said before, he says, we're in dire straits now. He says, having got this far, he said, we're short of officers and NCOs, experienced NCOs. So he said, I would like you to take over as company sergeant major and go to A company. Well, he said, oh, I said, I don't want to leave the platoon side of a good platoon there. I said, all the lads, I said, we understand each other, we work as a team. I said, that's it. He says, it doesn't matter. He says, you want the experience of fighting men. He said, you are one of them. So I said, I want you to take over company sergeant major and go to A company on the Major Cathcart. I said, right, you are, sir. Unfortunately, Major Cathcart was a bloody good officer. He finished up colonel of battalion, and he finished with it just before the war finished. And I was left with the company commander, a Major Buchanan. But I won't say no more about Major Buchanan, because it's all in the past now. I will say this. We marched from Tripoli, a divisional commander, Big Tom Wimberley. He was a Cumberland Highlander. The Major General. Montgomery had said, I want a volunteer with these units to move up to the front quickly, because the supply wagons, petrol supplies have been implemented, have been hindered at sea. So he said, I want a unit, a whole division, he says, to be up to the front as quickly as bloody possible. He's the only thing, you've got to march from Tripoli to Medellin. So we set off. And I normally take 6-7 boots with one truck with us, carrying a few equipment and clothing supplies, boots especially. And a 1,500 weight truck with foodstuffs, cooking utensils, and the CKMSs. And off we set. We marched and bloody marched night and day. It's a forced march. The whole division. 3 brigades, 10 battalions. The Middlesex was a 10th battalion. They were a machine gun battalion. I finished it with a size 9 boots. I kept changing my boots. My bloody feet were swollen. We carried first line ammunition with us, 200 rounds a person, in bandoliers round your neck. A full complement of ammunition, and we carried all battalion spares. And 1,025 rounds in a box of ordinary ammunition, 303. But anyway, we got to Medellin, took up our positions on the hill, and the orders were dig and dig like hell, and something which is very, very unusual, the British Army in position. Make a mess. Oh, look. What do you mean, make a mess? Throw your bloody cans about and your cigarette, your biscuits and bits of paper and whatnot here in these positions that you're digging. I, and not only me, but, well, we couldn't understand it. We said, bloody animal, see, we didn't know we're here. That's the reason you're doing it. Because once it's finished, we're pulling back. To pull him back, I said to my officer, I said, this is bloody stupid, is this? We're digging, we've marched and marched for nearly 2 days. I said, here we are digging like bloody hell. And eventually we're going to pull back to reverse source slope defence. It's a new thing that's Montgomery sort of. He'll bamboozle the enemy. This was on March the 6th, 1943. Or prior to March the 6th, Rommel's attack at Marath. Anyway, we pulled back and we got down below the battalion, the hills that we're on, the sand hills. And the next morning, he put in his his attack. Well, we were laying at the base of these hills, laughing like hell, because the Italians and the Germans got there, and they were so more surprised than we were. They're standing about, waving their arms about, laughing at one another. We were watching them, and they thought we'd buggered off. Well, all of a sudden, our mortars, a 25-pounders, and the machine guns opened up on them, on this ridge. They just toppled over like tin cans. And God, what a surprise that was. During the procedure, an aeroplane flew over, and he was shot down. He parachuted out of his aircraft, and they landed right in battalion headquarters. He's a young boy, 16 years of age, who had fought in Russia as a pilot. He hadn't been in North Africa long, but the Italian headquarters looked after him, and that was it. From there, I went on to Wadi Zigzow, and this was in Tunisia. This was the biggest downfall he had there, because it was mainly the New Zealanders who were on our left. Inland, we went across there. In the foothills there. You remember when we were in Tunisia? They never thought they could use the tanks over the terrain. It was so hilly and broken up. The Mount Matta Hills. And the 50th Div was to attack from the road. I think I'm running ahead here. No, I'm not. They were supposed to attack from the road on the sea inland at Wadi Zigazow. Now the Wadi was very, very wide and it was full of stagnant pools. The virtual hive for mosquitoes. We were supposed to follow up through the 51st Division and we took a position there and then we were rushed forward suddenly before our time with orders that the 50th Div had been repulsed. Well, they hadn't been repulsed, it had been stopped on the Zigazow. They can't advance no further. A heavy fire against them. So we went in, and I'll never forget my A Company were on the banks of the Wadi Zigazow, taking up defensive positions. And the opposite bank, which I would say, if I can recollect correctly, it would be 250 yards away. Wide was the Zigazow at that time. And out in front of us, out in front of us, on the ground, were the bodies of the 50th Div. Northumberland Fusiliers. The bodies were scattered all over. And I saw movement in the trenches opposite. And the trench system was similar to me, it looked similar to what it was in the First World War, which I only remembered from having read about it and seeing descriptions of them. When I saw movement, and it was only one poor chap, I say poor chap because after I'd shot him, I didn't know whether it was an enemy or whether it was a Northumberland from the 50th Div, who maybe had been slightly wounded or concussed and then came to the next morning. But I spotted him, I had a sniper's rifle with me, and I just shot this chap. So whether he was a German or a Northumberland, I don't know. You never forget this. And shortly after that, the carriers, my old platoon, were ordered forward through the gap across the Wadi. And I heard over the radio, we picked up the potatoes. Well, the potatoes they're referring to the mines that were there. They called them potatoes. We picked up the potatoes. Oh, we've harvested the potatoes. And of course the carriers carried on, and then of course the trucks went. And we piled into them. And we drove on to a place called Masabrega on the coast. And at Masabrega, I went up to the colonel. I said, could I have an interview, sir? He says, yes. I said, what is it? Well, I said, I'd like to revert to the rank of private or sergeant if you're so inclined to let me go back to my own platoon. If not, I said, I'll revert to the rank of private. Well, what for, Simpson? So I told him, I said, I was dissatisfied with the company commander. and older soldiers than me in the battalion, namely Jock Boys, the MT sergeant, a very old regular soldier, pre-war soldier, and others. And I felt like a two-year-old compared to them, a lot younger than them in my position and their service. Anyway, the CO hummed and argued, and he wasn't going to do it, but I persisted. And he said, okay then, take your old platoon back, go back to your old platoon. So I reverted to the rank of sergeant again, took over command of the carrier platoon, and we carried on the war. The next place we're at was Wadi Akarit. Now, Wadi Akarit was such a place. It was regarded as a battle, a short battle, which lasted about half a day. But in that half day, it was as bad as what Alamein was in ferocity. We were on the flat, and 155, I think it was 152 Brigade, which were Seaforths and Camerons, I think, the Seaforths and Gordons, and the Gurkhas, they were attacking the heights, which they called Rumala Ridge. It was a hell of a place. Well, my job that day was to go forward with the other advanced infantry and see if I could find passage over a big anti-tank ditch that was confronting us. But it was very, very hard to find. Go through forward under a heavy shell fire. But I managed to find one place to get the Bren gun carrier over to support what two units had got over. He was driven by McEwen and Davy Ewell. You remember Davy Ewell? Just those two. We had never heard no more of them throughout the battle, because the Germans started to attack. They attacked from under reach, but were held, so they turned their attacks to us on the flat, and we'd advanced. We were intermingled with the Argyles, because the Argyles in our brigade, they were seriously engaged, and Colonel Oliver, he was our colonel, he was stood not very, very far from Colonel Lord Campbell of the Argyles. Part of a stiff fight when he was shot through the throat